There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5. This is Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday. Live local talk. That's what we do. A couple hours of that straight ahead. Guest coming up on the show today. We'll work it, I guess, in reverse here, right? We're counting down the hits this week. Coming up in hour number two of the show, Stephen McNair is going to join us. We'll talk about some Mardi Gras and some porch decorating and the Mardi Gras flag and all that good stuff. But Stephen's also a guy that he's been on with us a handful of times, maybe a big handful of times. He's a commissioner at the Southern Rail Commission, and we're going to talk with him about a trip to Mobile by Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. Will that all be train talk? Will there be any bridge talk? We'll get into that coming up in hour number two, plus that GameStop story that Dalton and I have been talking about, rapid fire. So we'll be doing that in the 1 o'clock hour. Coming up at 12:30, Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson joins us. We'll talk with him about his announcement that he is in. He's going to run for the job again. And also some stories about the or discussion of that Hall of Fame courtyard to honor the baseball history of Mobile. We'll get into that coming up in the second half of this hour. Right now, check in with my buddy Cameron Smith, AL.com, and the Triptych Foundation. Hey, Cameron.
Hey, Sean. How you doing?
I'm good, I think. I'm good. I am trying to – there's a lot I want to talk about with you, but first of all, can we do some self-promotion? Do you want to do that? I mean, you think it's okay?
Sure. I'm a big fan of self-promotion, so we can do that.
Excellent. So so some of the new in 2021, I was telling people there around the new year that you thought we were doing a lot with our 54 hours a week of live local programming in podcast form. So that's we do 54 hours a week live local here, and we put that up in podcast form, and it's been extremely well received. But in addition, we're adding brand new podcast content that you can't even get on the radio. And one of those shows you'll be able to get is my friend Cameron Smith and I, and the name of the show, we went back and forth, but we did arrive on at least a working name for the show.
Yes, the tentative name is The Current, and this is something that can be really exciting for folks who want to have a common sense discussion about what's going on from two guys who are not particularly self-serious, but who care deeply about our country, the way we treat each other, and also have fantastic dad bods. So this is a very exciting thing for me.
Chock full of New Balance tennis shoes and Carhartt jeans. So we'll be putting that up soon. You'll be able to check that out with Cameron and I and the show called The Current. All right. A lot I want to get into today. I want to talk about your latest column over at AL.com. But I sent you, for the discussion, I sent you a link to a Politico story that I saw earlier today. And here is where, you know, people talking about the executive actions of Biden, the pendulum swings back and forth from former President Trump now to President Biden. But one of the questions during the campaign was this idea of packing the court, right? Supreme Court. And they didn't come out and say that today, but the headline from Politico, Biden starts staffing a commission on Supreme Court reform. To somebody with your education and time in the trenches on this, what does it mean to you?
It means, how can I pack the court without saying I want to just pack the court? Because I understand the branches, they're designed to check each other, right? So it's not completely strange that the executive branch and the legislative branch would look at the Supreme Court and say, well, we want to check your power. But the truth is, I'm not aware of an issue with the Supreme Court. I'm not aware that the Supreme Court is not working as intended. And I understand there's a lot of Democrats who say, well, you know, Trump got three different justices confirmed on the Supreme Court. That's not fair, but it was fair. It was how the process worked, and now they want to be able to squeeze some folks on there. And I understand it. I understand why you would want that politically, but the whole notion of the court is the court shouldn't be a political entity, and I think we've seen, based on some of the decisions from the Supreme Court, that they certainly didn't show fealty to Trump, and so I don't think there's a problem. The idea that we would look for a problem amongst the non-problems is a little weird to me.
Okay. Tell folks, so in court packing, because it hasn't been done, but the idea, just give us the primer, you know, the Wikipedia entry on court packing. What is that? What changes? How do we go from nine to how many, and how do they do that?
Well, you can go to however many you want. The Constitution does not prescribe a specific number of justices. It talks about the Supreme Court and kind of some of the contours there. But the Congress has the ability to determine through law, basically, how many justices are on the Supreme Court. And the idea of expanding that number to 11 or expanding that number to, you know, 13 or 15 or, you know, 5,001 is something that's up for debate. The idea is, well, we don't like the ideological balance of the court, so we would pack it, you know, Democrats saying, well, we would pack it to recalibrate that. And that basically is saying, we don't like the Supreme Court's current makeup, so we want to give ourselves the ability to put Supreme Court justices on there. I think right now, possibly Sinema, definitely Manchin, they would have real trouble getting to a majority to pack the court at this point.
But doing this study is paving a road to that, right? And if it happened, and you would have, could it, I guess, only happen when you had bicameral control and executive branch control? Do you need that for one party to be able to be putting new justices in?
You have to have the situation that they have right now, but in theory, that's probably not even enough, because you have to have every Democratic senator saying, let's pack the court. And I'm assuming Kamala Harris would go along with it to break the tie. But I don't see a situation where this is a one that goes well. If I had to guess what this is, as an olive branch to the progressives who really want this to be an initial agenda item, and Joe Biden saying, I'm happy to look at it. You know, I don't want to tell you to go away, but the political realities here of, we don't like playing within the ground rules as they are. We want to use a bare majority to try to jam through a expansion of the court to create the opportunities for Biden to put people on there he wants. You know, it's one thing to say we're going to try to fill the existing seats, because that's normally how we've done it, and people say we don't like that. But it's a different matter entirely to say we're going to create the seats to fill them to change the makeup. And I don't think that that's going to sell well politically outside of the fringe left.
And I guess those still would be lifetime appointments, right? So every time you had – if this would happen, I know you're saying it wouldn't, but if it would, then while a party had full control, they would pack the court with their people. Then the other party gets in power the same way, and they pack as many as they can in, and it goes on and on, I guess, until – to 5,001.
Well, there's no rational limitation, right? I mean, there's no reason why. For example, this notion of, well, it's almost never the case that you have all three branches of government. Well, Democrats have it now, more or less. The Republicans had it in 2016. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen examples of where it's flipped back and forth. And so we could do this with significant frequency. And I think people recognize that. And the folks who are pretty reasonable say, well, if you can tell me when enough is enough, then we'll stop. But if we're just going to create, anytime you get the trifecta of House, Senate, White House, you redo the court, that's irrational. It is a strange politicization of the court. And if your issue is the court's too political right now, this effort would ensure that that is the case indefinitely.
Yeah, it would be a good point. I mean, the the cure is worse. If you do believe that there's a problem, the cure is worse than the problem. All right, so coming right back with Cameron Smith, we're going to talk about his latest piece over at AL.com. And remember that podcast, probably next week or so, the debut episode will be up and we'll be talking about it, called The Current. There's going to be verified dad bods or dudes who wear New Balance, but those names got shut down for The Current. So it is right now. Be right back. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. Good to talk to my buddy Cameron Smith, AL.com, and the Triptych Foundation. Read his work, and you can go to AL.com. Just Google him, or I guess they could go to your Twitter feed, too, Cameron, right? They could go directly there.
Sure. Visit me at D. Cameron Smith on Twitter, and I enjoy a good yelling at a GIF or the occasional photos. So, you know, join in.
You might be getting some of that when you have a headline like, "The Republican World as It Is, Not as We Wish It to Be." All right. Do some explaining here.
Well, I just had to lead with Saul Alinsky and say, you quote him from Rules for Radicals and say, "It's painful to accept fully the simple fact that one begins from where one is." And I think the problem that, it's a problem for Republicans and Democrats, but really Republicans right now need to take stock of where we are and say, whoa, you know, what actually happened? What do we want to do going forward? And how do we build a majority coalition to earn the right to govern? And I think those are some tough questions. And if it's just fight socialism or we don't like that Trump wasn't elected, like none of that is actually a plan. And so what I'm trying to point out is tell me where you want to go. Tell me how we're going to get there instead of spending all your time saying the other guy is really, really bad and we don't like them, because that's not a governing philosophy. And that's what the column's about, is don't focus on the other guy. Focus on what you can control and where you want to go. And I asked the question, how long would a boxer last in a ring if he spent all his energy really upset that the other fighter is trying to knock him out? I mean, that's what happens in politics. And a lot of times I hear Republicans right now saying, well, Democrats are really bad, or liberals are really bad, or socialists are really bad, but not telling me why they're good or where they want to go or what they want to do.
Okay, so do my part here and play devil's advocate, and people will say, people come out to the, you say boxing maybe a little tougher, but let's say it's wrestling or something, for the antics of your favorite hero, right, or your anti-hero, the antics and the hubbub. You're not looking at the craft of what they're doing. I mean, and what I'm saying is I agree with you, but I think it reflects back on the voters more. I mean, we're having people do this because they've been successful with it. It's a successful tactic.
Well, we just don't expect very much. And I do. I mean, and I've repeatedly said, hey, voters, this is on you, because we govern ourselves. We elect the people. They run the government. And when they don't deliver the goods, we need to toss them out. And that's the situation that we find ourselves in, that we just don't expect so much. I mean, we, instead of getting actual like Olympic wrestling, we have WWF, where it's mm-hmm. scripted. It is sensational. Now, well, it may said. Be really entertaining. It's just not really useful.
No, that's good. That's a good analogy. I didn't think about that, to move into that. And in that, because it's, you know, you would think with Olympic wrestling, and there's people, which, by the way, shout out to the Daphne girls wrestling team that won the state. But you watch people that really know about wrestling. They watch a match and they're watching for the, look at the technique of this person. Look how they're I'm a fan of this person because they've got this move or that move. Where if you take it to the WWE stuff, it's all about they came out and they had some explosions go off and they had a crazy outfit on and they said all this trash about the person they were about to wrestle.
Right, but there's nothing that they're actually doing. It is pageantry. It is a show. And I'm not saying they're not, you know, they're not athletes or whatever. They're just not doing anything that's useful and hasn't already been preordained. And I think that's where, you know, using the analogy, in a Olympic wrestling match, the goal is to, you know, outscore the other person or pin them. And Republicans right now, my ask as a conservative is tell me how you outscore the Democrats and earn the right to govern. Tell me how you pin them down on different issues, provide alternatives, and let's go from there. Let's build from there, because I understand the really, like, how beneficial it is to your emotional well-being to point out the hypocrisy of the left. But that's not a governing philosophy. It's not a way to say, here's what I really want and expect. And we let our officials get away with saying socialism is bad. Well, okay, now what? And we just don't ask the now what.
You know, I wonder if it's, if you offer ideas, right? And this is some of the stuff that people can catch on the podcast. We talked about this at length. But if you offer ideas, you then open yourself up for criticism. And that could be at the water cooler or in Congress, right? If you talk about certain solutions or ideas, you're, versus just commenting on the other side. And I think we saw the best example of this of, you know, for 4 years with Democrats going after President Trump, they really didn't talk about policy. Did you hear much about policy? I didn't. I heard a lot about why this person is bad, right? The anti-cult of personality. And so, therefore, they don't have to come out and say, here's our idea, here's our plans. They can just say, well, you don't want Donald Trump, so vote for Biden.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, the reason that Joe Biden got so many more votes than down-ticket House Democrats was because people just said that. They're like, well, we don't like this Trump guy, so we'll vote for this Biden guy. But they didn't really think about it or know why. They weren't, there wasn't a, here's the real policy arguments that we see here and there. And what's funny is watching some folks say, yeah, kind of have immediate buyer's remorse with Biden of saying, where are all these executive orders coming from? Like, what's this thing about, like, transgender stuff? When did all that? And they're saying, well, we didn't really know that this was where he was going to be. You know, that's on the voter. That's on the person at pulling at the polls saying, I support you. You might want to know what you're supporting.
Yeah, I had a texter the other day say that they were somebody who had voted for Biden, and they said just within 1 week, I feel like I've been hoodwinked. I think I'm using the right word that they said they thought, you know, Biden had portrayed, which I don't know. You could watch certain debates and maybe not be fooled, but he said he was going to govern as a centrist. And he said, what I'm seeing is anything but. I feel like I've been hoodwinked. And then he said, come on, 2022, and Republicans getting control in Congress. So maybe if you just went to vote, you know, because you didn't like Donald Trump, then maybe you're – I don't know. I mean, should you be surprised? Should you have done better due diligence before you went and voted?
Well, I mean, the same thing happened in 2016. Folks were like, man, we don't want a Clinton dynasty, mm-hmm. so we're going to give Trump – he's a wild man, but we'll give him a shot, right? And then when he behaved like a wild man, you know, a lot of folks were like, well, I'm just shocked. I cannot believe this. And I'm like, based on what? Mm-hmm. What surprises you based on what was publicly available? Same thing with Biden. I mean, based on what's out there, based on selecting Kamala Harris as a running mate, like, what made you think this guy was going to be some middle of the road guy who's working equally with Republicans and Democrats? Like, I think that we saw this a little bit with Barack Obama. I mean, he projected himself as the hope and change candidate, mm-hmm. and a sort of post-partisan leader. And then he turned out to be a rank and file liberal. I mean, there's nothing surprising or bad about that. But the idea of we're going to buy into this transcendency of post-partisan leadership, I haven't seen any evidence that that's going to happen with Biden or, frankly, anybody else, because, you know, we just have different opinions on where we want to take the country. And that's OK. That's how this works. But the idea that there's some middle ground that's magical, that may be where we end up, but it's not where we start from.
Yeah. And I wonder if there's any, the problem is there's no power base in it. And I wonder if what we're seeing now is, because I believe President Biden is obviously a creature of Washington, and his opinions will be the opinions that get him elected. And those people and those constituencies that have brought him to the dance, he's now dancing with them, you know, because he doesn't care. It's just he's now president. He got what he wants. Now he's paying it off.
Yeah, and he's got so Biden is a tactically savvy politician. Mm-hmm. You can say whatever you want about him, throw some personal insults his way, but he knows Washington. He knows how to build a majority. And right now he's banking on, if I just go ahead and rip the Band-Aid off, do some solid stuff in the eyes of my base, 4 years from now if I move towards the center. Let's say he does a Supreme Court, you know, study and the commission comes back and says, well, actually, you know, it's more or less okay. So he doesn't pack the court. So he doesn't do some things that the left really wants. Then he can say, hey, you know, I'm not some rabid liberal. I'm here. And that's the tactical approach. I mean, from a political standpoint, it's very, very smart. I think his challenge is not having a revolt from his populist base that's very liberal that says, we want you to just give us everything we want. It's the same problem Republicans are having with the Trumpiest folks, the populist base on the Republican side, saying, we want what we want. We're not really interested in the principle here or there. It's just pulling in a different direction. And it's who can navigate that the best. And right now, I think Joe Biden is probably in the best position to do that.
There he is. Cameron Smith, AL.com. And check him out on Twitter. Where?
At D. Cameron Smith.
All right. Appreciate the time, man. We'll talk soon.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5. It's Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. And mentioned earlier at the beginning of the show, Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson. Sandy Stimson joining us now. Lots to talk about with the mayor. And thanks for coming back on.
And glad to be here, Sean.
Watched the announcement earlier this week that you, the question, I don't know how many times I've asked you over the last year or so and gotten a stare from you about that, but you did make the announcement you are in.
Right. You know, Sean, as Gene and I contemplated that decision and the rest of my family, I mean, everywhere we would go, just the overwhelming support. People were just saying, I mean, Sandy, you've got to run. And they were telling Gene the same thing, Sandy's got to run. Well, you know, you start to feel the sincerity of that. You realize that the things that, while you may have accomplished a lot, there's still a lot left to be accomplished, and we're well on our way to getting it done. And so I'm excited about it. I think it's just a really kind of an unprecedented opportunity to push some things over the goal line.
Yeah, that's one thing I was wondering. And listening to your speech where you announced that you're running again, that feeling, it must be, that you work so hard on a project, and if it hasn't come to fruition yet, but it's close, it would be hard to let that go.
And it is, Sean, because you see a change in any administration, whether it's the mayor level, the governor level, or presidential level. A new administration just completely can change the direction of, you know, project could be in midstream, and they just decide they're not going to do it. So when I think about relocating the airport, you know, trying to build a bridge, building a magnificent waterfront park. You know, I mean, all those things, if you stop and had to restart, you know, I'm not sure where they would end up.
And that's the thing. I mean, there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that goes into that. I mean, I just know from on the periphery, you know, that these things don't come easily.
No, they sure don't. You know, when I think about the negotiations on the Brooklyn by the Bay property, I mean, it took forever. But, you know, it's going to be well worth it because it tees the Brooklyn Aeroplex up for a very, very bright future. But more importantly, or just as importantly, you know, the opportunity to have a 150-acre waterfront park. And I don't believe there's a 150-acre waterfront park on Mobile Bay. And I'd be interested in knowing what it is along the coast of Alabama if there's one that big. But anyway, it's going to be significant.
Very much so. And to go from a lament of some citizens, right? I think a lot of citizens, that there wasn't a place inside the city limits, you know, that you could access, put your toes in the water kind of stuff. Here we are on the river, and we didn't have that access. To go from, hey, we don't have anything, to go into something that big, yeah, that's quite an accomplishment.
We're excited about it. And we've actually started conversations about, you know, starting to visualize what can this look like, you know, how do we hire somebody to help us maximize the use of that park, you know, so that all citizens will have something that could be done there, that they could do there.
Mayor, did you come into your first term, come into office with ideas of, obviously you did, and you campaigned on them, what you're going to do for the city and what changes you're going to make. Once you get inside, do you have a moment where you go, well, that's maybe not as easy as I thought, or we have to do this a different way? I mean, are there ideas that you have when you're running for office, or anybody's running for office, and then you get inside you, the dog finally catches the car, and you go, okay, this may be a little more complex.
The answer to that is yes, you have those thoughts, and it is more complex. Interestingly, as I've traveled around and met with other mayors, many of whom have been city councilors beforehand, they become the mayor, and they say they really didn't have a clue what all it took to be the mayor. Of course, I didn't have any previous experience, so I had no expectations on what to expect. But having come from the private sector, comparing to that, it just takes a lot longer. A lot more bases have to be touched. And there are truly people out there that, you know, want to thwart whatever effort that you may have for, it could be, you know, personal reasons or other reasons. So, yes, it's more challenging to do it, but that just means that's why you end up having to have a very diverse team working with you, because they will look at things maybe different than just the mayor, but they'll help you realize that there is a pathway forward to solve these problems. And so it's through teamwork that you get things done, but it does take longer.
And so does that mean, like, you're getting to this goal, you had this idea, like in from the private sector, you would have, okay, here's how the company is going to achieve this, and you move forward with that. And there are often pitfalls there, but in the public sector, I mean, you may not, do you get to run a straight line from what you wanted to do to the accomplishment, or do you end up having to take detours?
Lots of detours. You know, very seldom is it a straight line. But there have been situations that have actually ended up being easier than maybe anticipated. And I'll tell you one that I'm excited about. I'm not sure it's going to be easy, but I think that the buy-in is going to be incredible, and that's this Hall of Fame courtyard where we're going to honor Hank Aaron and the rest of our baseball Hall of Famers. I mean, the what that's going to do for the city of Mobile and for the pride in the city, and hopefully aspire some of our young people to be Hall of Famers once we complete that courtyard, I think it's going to be transformative.
I want to get back to the details on that, too, and the build-out. But before that, something you and I talked about during the news break, and really didn't get to finish our conversation, so let's do it right here on the radio. So with your experience in this city, and mine being a little junior to yours, and knowing the history of baseball here, what the heck happened? Why is it that, like, I talk to people that are my parents' age and older, and they get this deep-rooted love of the baseball history for Mobile and baseball in general, but you get to my age and younger, it seems like it's just, I'm not saying nobody likes baseball, but they don't have that same connection.
Yeah. Sean, I don't know the answer to that, but for some reason it just flashed through my mind. You know, as TV became the medium that everybody was, where heroes were created. For some reason, Joe Namath comes to mind and getting a $400,000 salary, if I remember correctly, and Broadway Joe and just the glamour. You know, it seemed to set it apart maybe in some people's minds about that time of years, that formative age, that, hey, maybe this is the direction I need to go. But obviously, when you transition like this country has from baseball to football, it's more than any one or two or five things. It's a whole network of things.
So this is an attempt to turn that around. To I mean, because I wonder, I thought about, while our Mardi Gras history has always bound us together here, but I would argue the last decade or two, I've seen a resurgence in people paying attention to Mardi Gras at levels they maybe didn't when I was a kid. I wonder if that could happen on the baseball side as part of our history.
Well, we didn't really approach this from the standpoint of it changing the way we look at a sport. It had more to do with honoring those who are iconic sports figures, who are known for who they were and what they did. When you think about Hank Aaron and what a gentleman he was, and a humanitarian, how humble he was, and just from a role model standpoint of how many people would be better off if they could emulate Hank Aaron. So our thought is that we have some really great stories to tell just among those five, but even in the last 24 hours, we realize this thing is going to be much bigger and it will grow past being Baseball Hall of Fame. Eventually, you'll see Football Hall of Fame, and even though Bill is the one that comes to mind, it's going to be more than that.
Okay, so it moves to other sports and kind of honoring those greats that came from right here.
Yes. And I'll give you two examples. You know, you could end up with pavers for everybody in the Mobile Sports Hall of Fame. It's just one idea. You know, another idea is that you could take all your professional athletes. There could be a wall that lists the names of every professional football player we have, maybe with a, you know, the team and the year. I mean, you can build out so much with our heroes in all sports. I mean, somebody mentioned yesterday we had a professional women's baseball player, and could she be considered to be recognized in this? And my thought is that right now this is in the formative stages where the seed was and the nucleus was the Cooperstown Hall of Famers. There's going to be a lot of interest in recognizing other people, which I think it makes it even better.
It does, and more reason for people to come and be in Mobile. And speaking of that, I just got to get an update here, because we've talked about this in the past, what a tough year 2020 was, but because of certain things, the way people spent money and online and money coming back to municipalities, how are the revenues for the city? How are we looking going in here? I mean, we're in this fiscal year, but I mean, we've got, you know, one leg in 2020 calendar year, one leg in 2021 calendar year. How are we looking?
So we ended up the fiscal year in a very strong fashion, which was very surprising. If you had asked me in last March, April, or May where we were going to be, you know, that was a very tense time, and we couldn't do projections with any sense of accuracy, okay? But anyway, we ended up very strong, and we have started off this year very strong. And, you know, it's just a blessing. And if you take that plus kind of the unprecedented investments that we've had from the state and from the federal government, specifically related to the port and the airport, plus the Brookley purchase from the state money for the governor's office. I mean, we have a lot to do to make sure that we take these dollars and invest them wisely, because it won't always be this way. And so we've got to make the licks count right now so that we can get a return on the dollars that are being pumped into Mobile.
And as we wrap up, I want to ask this is kind of a bigger question. Next hour, we're going to talk about Transportation Secretary Buttigieg coming to Mobile. And I think back to the start of a discussion of this I-10 Mobile River Bridge project. And we were talking about, I think, Transportation Secretary Fox then came to town. So we got the Obama administration, now the Biden administration, and their transportation secretary is coming here. And I was talking to Congressman Carl about this yesterday. And he said, well, you know how this – I said, you know, it was – interesting that we got the Obama administration so interested in what was going on down here. And he said that was all courtesy of somebody who was part of the Obama administration being stopped in traffic, trying to get, I think, to the Grand Hotel or something like that. Do you remember that?
I vaguely remember that conversation. Yeah.
So somebody was, I mean, so the traffic we're trying to solve was the impetus to get a presidential administration interested.
It's really about the congestion, and the congestion on I-10, it being a major east-west thoroughfare. But I will say this, that Buttigieg, if I said that right, I apologize, Secretary, if I pronounced that wrong, but he and I were in the same cohort at Bloomberg's leadership conference. And it was really a year where 40 mayors from around the world went and spent time in New York with Harvard and Bloom, called the Bloomberg Harvard Initiative. But anyway, so he and I were in class together for, you know, off and on during the period of that year. So if I were to call him, he would certainly know who I am. And so at the appropriate time, assuming he's confirmed, you know, I will make that phone call.
Okay, that's what I want to hear. I want to hear that you can call him and say, hey, remember when we were hanging out before? And there's this I-10 down here. Maybe you want to come take a look at it.
That's right. I will make the call. Just want to make sure I make it at the right time. He'll be drinking through a fire hose initially, and, you know, I don't want to get drowned out by the other noise that's out there.
Okay. Well, I know that you will, when that time comes, you'll let us know about it. And, of course, as is my way, I'll ask you about it probably 25 times between now and then.
Roger.
All right. Remind folks, so if they want to get more information, you know, because it's not like you're a new commodity, but somebody might be new to town, might be thinking about their vote coming this August, where do they go to get more about your campaign?
It's sandyformayor.com.
Very good.
Yep.
Mayor Stimson, thanks for your time. Thanks for being on with us today.
Hey, thanks, Sean. Appreciate it.
All right. You too. There's Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson joining us, and we're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile. And speaking of that transportation discussion, Stephen McNair is going to join us here in hour number two of the show. We'll talk more about the train portion of this, too, and what that could mean from a federal perspective in Amtrak. So we'll get into that. Also, we'll check in with Matt Murphy from Birmingham about the damage from the tornadoes that hit Fultondale. It's all straight ahead. Stay right there.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Wednesday style. Glad to have you here. It's also good to talk to my buddy Larry Kirby at LCM. And we're always talking inventory and financing because y'all got that on lock, man. It's good. What's happening this week?
Absolutely. Well, and also I'll tell you something about LCM Motor Cars. 95% of our vehicles all have a big, bold price on the windshield. Year, model, mileage, and like I said, price. And on the dash of every vehicle, Carfax.
So if we want to kind of do our research before we even sit down with you, we can do that right there in the parking lot.
Absolutely. You know, if they come up after hours, the mileage is written in the bottom left-hand corner of every windshield because you can't see the odometer for the car is locked.
True. I like that. Okay. So we can – because, yeah, some of us are shy about that, and we may want to do that after hours and then come see you the next day.
Absolutely. We get a lot of after-hours traffic. Our lot is lit up really well in the wintertime when it's dark early. But like I said, we're well lit.
All right. Come on out. Check them out, whether you do it after hours or during regular hours. How do they find you?
Highway 90 at Plantation Road, online at lcmmotorcars.com. They can like us on Facebook or just call us at 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, Sean.
There we go. LCM. That's why we recommend LCM. And another reason, you can go out there and you know, I may be one of those people that I would like to kind of after hours. Dalton will back me up. I'm pretty shy when I'm away from this place, right?
Yeah, you are. Even when you're inside the place. It's only when there's a mic in front of you that you're not shy.
Right. Pretty much the rest of the time, I am fairly shy. So I get that. And what a great deal. So check them out, LCM. And if you go after hours, look at those prices, look at those miles, and then give them a call. All right, my man. Dalton Warwick in studio, because there's a lot for us to go through here in a short amount of time. It's almost like Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah.
We're talking about this GameStop story that I said something. Look at my email, and my Twitter feed and my text line. People are talking about it as well. You and I have been talking about it for a few days. Explain what this is.
So I'm trying to wrap my feeble mind around what's happening here with GameStop. And it seems like it's a bit of an online Wall Street coup or an online revolution of some sort. So there's this forum called Reddit, and it's got a bunch of other forums on it. One of those is called Wall Street Bets, and you have a lot of people that just hang out in this forum, and they just talk back and forth. Well, they've got a lot more insight than I do, and they saw that GameStop, of course, a failing company.
Which is
they've sold video games and trade video games and hardware and have for a long time. Well, that business model seems to be on its way out with how quickly the internet can download games and people could just buy the games online, store them on their hard drives, and not have to worry about going into a brick and mortar store anymore. So, so GameStop was on its way down, and its numbers, it had really, really cheap stock. And these guys on Wall Street Bets found that some of these big hedge fund companies, one in particular, had shorted the stock of GameStop. Actually, they had shorted more than the company was worth, over 100% of the company. Now, I don't know exactly how that works, but they decided to band together and go long on this company, GameStop, and they just bought shares and shares and shares so that these big hedge funds would have to cover their losses.
So they bought in not really because of the PE ratio or anything to deal with the stock of GameStop. They did it to stick it in the eye of
the hedge fund. And in the meantime, grab a quick buck.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to grab a lot more than a quick buck. This has even grabbed the attention of Elon Musk, of course, the billionaire who runs Tesla and SpaceX. So since the beginning of the year, GameStop was trading at $17.25 a share. It's jumped more than 822%. And that was as of Monday, where the stock was trading at $159. Last I saw, it was trading at about $330 a share. And now you have TD Ameritrade, who said they're limiting purchases. Also, NASDAQ has said that they're monitoring social media. Even the Biden team in the press conference today said they're monitoring what's happening with GameStop. I don't know if we have the time here, but there was a man who went on CNBC, Chamath Palihapitiya, who is a investor, big-time investor. He actually bought in on this. He explained what he thinks is happening here.
I think that what you're seeing is essentially a pushback against the establishment in a really important way. You have a lot of people, and I would encourage anybody who is dismissive of this thing to go into Wall Street Bets and actually just read the forums. And I think that you're going to see three kinds of posts. The first kind of content are a lot of people doing some incredible fundamental diligence on companies, trying to think about long-term value. And in my opinion, many of them are doing as good and, frankly, a better job than a lot of hedge fund analysts that I work with. That's number one. The second are a lot of people who believe that, you know, coming out of 2008, what happened was Wall Street took an enormous amount of risk and they left retail as the bag holder. And a lot of these kids were in grade school and high school when that happened. They lost their homes, their parents lost their jobs. And they've always wondered, like, why did those folks get bailed out for taking enormous amounts of risk and nobody helped and showed up to help my family? And then the third thing is a realization that instead of having idea dinners or, you know, quiet whispered conversations amongst hedge funds in the Hamptons, these kids have the courage to do it transparently in a forum. And I'm not saying all of it is perfect by any means, but I think it takes an enormous amount of faith in the system to be that transparent, to talk about things, and then for each individual to make their own mind up and to do things, whether it's to buy and to sell.
There we go.
Yeah, so it's almost like we've seen with the rise of Donald Trump and drain the swamp. This is almost like a drain the financial swamp.
Yeah, it's like drain the Wall Street swamp.
And now we're seeing similar rises in AMC, and Nokia might be the next to see these guys, these individual investors go long and face off against these big hedge funds. I don't know where this ends or how it ends.
But it is, I mean, I'm very interested in what's happening here, but some of these companies, those inflations are artificial. I mean, is the stock really worth that?
There's no way the GameStop stock is worth that. What they've done.
I mean, what's Apple trading at? What's GameStop
And there's been more trading in GameStop today than in Apple or Tesla. That's how this has taken off today.
Wow. We'll keep our eyes on this story and maybe get a chance at the end of the next hour to talk more about it. But we're watching it here. Coming up, Stephen McNair joins us. A lot to talk about with him. Plus, right before that, we're going to check in with Matt Murphy in Birmingham, talk about what it looks like in Fultondale today and how we can help.